Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Makor Namaja. Let's get into the first news story of today, and this is a press statement that was put out by Makor, which explores the first 100 days of the Government of National Unity. And the title here, Makor, is, I think, one that immediately would catch the eye of anyone who knows anything about us at the Institute of Race Relations. And it reads, IRR agrees with Malema, we need a plan. Would you care to elaborate?
Absolutely. So it's about jobs. He recently made a statement. He's been on a bit of a comeback now. And he made a statement about the fact that the GNU is good and all, but that the economy has suffered losses of jobs since it coming into power, and that there's also no clear plan about how those jobs are going to be generated. We're going into the festive season now, so I'm sure seasonal work will be on the up and up, but that's not a sustainable solution for ending, you know, the unemployment crisis that South Africa has been facing for a while now. And we make the points in that PR that whilst it's too soon for the GNU to start reversing unemployment trends and for jobs to start trickling in as a result of its formation, it's too late for there not to have been a plan 100 years into their governing. And so we're essentially pushing the president primarily and his cabinet to read one of our reports, which was actually released this week. It's authored by Dr. Anthea Jeffrey, and in it, she goes into a detailed account of some of those labor reforms that are currently creating barriers to job employment and job creation that the government can look to reversing in order to start seeing a real significant turn in those labor and unemployment trends. We also talk about a little bit about the Social Research Foundation, the SRF's latest polling, which was done in the month of September. And in it, they group their respondents by one of the measurements or indicators they group their respondents by is by income per month. And what you see there is that people who earn below 2,000 rand per month, but generally people who earn below 5,000 rands per month, consistently point to jobs and unemployment as what the government need to prioritize. That's their top ranking issue for those that section of our population. We pair that with an Afrobarometer report, right, in sort of creating a cohesive message around eradicating barriers to growth. We pair that with the Afrobarometer 2020 survey, which was done on South Africans, that also demonstrates that people said that they would rather have more jobs in the economy that are low paying than no jobs at all, right? Again, we're hinting at things like minimum wage, various racialization of labor statutes that are just creating those blocks towards solving the problem of ending unemployment and ending economic exclusion. So yeah, there's absolutely no reason for us to not agree with Julius Malema on that point about there needing to be a plan. And I encourage even our own audience to get on the IRR website and give Dr. Jeffrey's report a read. I've done a poor job at summarizing. It's obviously quite detailed and exceptionally written. So yeah, highly encourage even Julius Malema to read our reports about how we can bring about those labor reforms.
Yeah, if Julius Malema starts agreeing with some of our ideas for how to improve South Africa's unemployment problem, I would have to very much soften my views on him. I'll say that much. And I think he's completely right when he says that, you know, vibes are not enough. You actually need to really change things if you want to see improvements in people's lives, which is a point we've been making a lot on the show over the last while. And yeah, until some of the ideas implemented in the paper written by Anthea Jeffrey, we are not, I think, going to see major changes. Okay, let's go on with our next story. And this is just the continuing fallout of the situation in the city of Tshwane. So Action SA's candidate Mayor Moya was elected yesterday by the ANC and EFFs working together with Action SA to put her in charge. I think, as I said yesterday, this is a bit of a win for Action SA in that it looked for a moment like they were going to walk away with no mayorship position and also having thrown the DA out of power in Tshwane. That has at least been put to rest for now. But the real question is, what is the government in Tswana going to look like? And is the mayor going to be able to actually do anything to keep the city moving in the right direction? And it's a little bit unclear because, as it turns out, the parties involved in that election have not actually agreed on who was going to be in the government. They agreed on who the mayor was going to be, but the division of the portfolios between the different parties has not been done yet. The ANC has claimed that it is the leader of the coalition in Tswana, regardless of whether it holds the mayorship position or not. And the ANC is expected to be given the position of deputy mayor, which was created in Tswana to give to Action SA originally. The EFF says it's very excited to form part of the government and that it is going to, well, that it wants a quote-unquote strategic portfolio. They've said that their examples in Ekurhuleni and City of Joburg show that they are ready and capable of taking over government in Tswana. Action SA is also likely to get a couple of MMC positions in the city. Mkhwanya, what do you make of this? I mean, it's kind of sort of strikes me as sort of funny that no one, these plans all seem to be made up 5 minutes after the due date. There was no comprehensive deal here. It was just like a kind of last minute decision to elect an Action SA mayor. And now there's still the whole catfight over who exactly is going to be in the government. What do you make of this?
Was it a last-minute decision to elect her? Because Action SA had ended the coalition with the DA on the basis that they would only coalesce with the ANC if they got the position of mayor, which I'm also surprised they managed.
So I will say that Action SA will say this was the plan all along, but the ANC, immediately after throwing out Silias Brink, started saying, well, we're going to think about who we're putting in as mayor. And they started suggesting all of their own people. So it seems to me like beforehand, they didn't really come to a deal on that one.
True. There were very many conflicting stories in the press from these parties. But also on the EFF's points about their good governance in Ekurhuleni, I mean, the ANC claims in their internal report that the EFF gave them a bad reputation, a reputation of being corrupt and managing poorly in Ekurhuleni as a result of that partnership. So even the ANC disagrees on that point, EFF, I'm afraid. But I'm actually quite, I was hopeful about Dr. Moya's, let's say, election until I heard her speak on Newsroom Africa. And what she's now trying to do is walk back every time they voted in agreement with the DA when she was the deputy mayor. And she's now saying things like they have to find the 1 billion rand required to pay the municipal workers in Tswane, those raises that you'll remember, Nick, they held a strike for weeks and weeks over. And she was asked pointedly, well, why did you agree with the DA? And she claims ignorance. When she was asked, why did you agree with the budget that was tabled that would lead to those municipal workers not getting a raise? She claims ignorance. She says that they couldn't have at that time, even when trying to establish what the reason was that these workers were disgruntled over their salary, lack of salary increases. She claims they couldn't actually establish the reasons. So I've just seen her now trying to distance herself from her own term as a deputy mayor. Let's not forget that that position was created for her. There wasn't a deputy mayor in Tswane before the DA and Action SA decided to create a power share agreement where they would create that position for her. And just seeing her trying to worm her way out of giving genuine reasons about what actually led to the coalition and the fact that the coalition ending, but also the fact that she's actually innocent, right, in why the coalition ended. This is more Herman Mashaba, I think. Herman Mashaba and like higher ranking leaders in the DA conflict than it really was a style of governance by Celia Brink and her as deputy mayor. But now she's making it that. And I've found that a bit disappointing. But I am happy to see that she has been doing media rounds. You know, she's already done more than what some of those mayors who've been elected as sort of an agreement between the ANC and EFF have done, which is thrusting herself in front of journalists and being asked difficult questions and attempting to answer them. Although I'm not confident in those answers she's providing now. And so I encourage everyone to go watch her interviews and see her dancing her way out of her own record as a deputy mayor of Tswane. I've been quite worried about some of the commitments she's now making when she really only has a year, 2025, and then a little bit of 2026 before the next election. I was hoping that they would keep whatever plans that the DA and her and Action SA, the former coalition, I was hoping they'd keep those plans going to keep the finances of the city stable, because they have been dire. And then when 2026 comes around, they get to claim easy victories because they didn't even have to come up with the plans. They just had to continue the execution. And of course, she's well suited to do that. She was the deputy mayor. But seeing her distance herself from this, and she's also done a few dog whistles, you know, the whole different styles of governance in the suburban areas versus the townships. She's been participating in a little bit of that, which I guess is the politics elements of it all. But yeah, I hold out little hope now as a result of that interview about how well she will do as a mayor, as opposed to when I hadn't watched that interview, I thought she'll actually be fine.
Yeah, well, she only needs to last longer than 3 months to beat up Tapelo Ahmad, who was the short-lived mayor of Johannesburg, from Al Jamaha, which is not a flattering comparison in any way to ever be compared to Tapelo Ahmad. But anyway, let's move on now, I think, to our next story. And this one's not very important, but I think it's just kind of interesting. So a sort of lesser-known issue in South African foreign policy is South Africa's quite firm stance on the dispute between Morocco and Western Sahara, or the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic, I think is its official name is. For many years, the ANC has been very firm in its stance that Morocco is illegally occupying Western Sahara. This comes up from time to time. In fact, the ANC will often pepper it into various speeches they make on topics. And it's one of those sort of foreign policy disputes that most other parties in the country don't seem to get too excited about, except maybe the EFF sometimes. But the ANC is very wedded to it, I think, for sort of old ideological reasons, going back to their time in exile. Anyway, this is, however, caused a bit of a disciplinary issue within the ANC, because apparently, according to a letter seen by some of the media houses, I think News 24, NEC member of the ANC that's a member of the highest decision-making body in the ANC between elective conferences, Obed Bapela, apparently went on what he described to the ANC as a family trip to Morocco. However, the ANC claims that while he was there, he claimed he was representing the ANC and South Africa, perhaps more broadly, and that he encouraged the furthering of economic ties with Morocco while he was in the country. And they are now issuing a disciplinary against him, saying that his conduct is a serious violation of our principles and policies. I guess the implication here is that he essentially misrepresented himself as more important than he really was, and as speaking for the government, maybe to get some kind of benefit from the Moroccans, who for years have wanted to sort of mend fences with African countries over this issue. I don't know. What's kind of funny about it, though, is it shows that the ANC is just sort of, I think, continuously struggling with a level of bad discipline within its ranks. What do you make of this?
Bad discipline and a few mules who keep leaking their internal documents to the media, Nick. But I must say, one thing that caught my attention about that letter was that it was drafted by state capture accused Nomvula Mokonyane. I mean, the jokes just keep writing themselves. She's in no position, obviously, to be administering over anybody's disciplinary processes, given that she's got her own. But I'm also growing quite resentful of the ANC throwing a few of its, I'll say, rogue politicians who have or are close to irrelevance under the bus, when we know that they are big fish to catch as far as corruption is concerned and bringing government into disrepute concerns. Yeah, I mean, Obed Bapela is now just an NEC member. I don't think he holds any position in government any longer. And so, yes, he's damaged the ANC's reputation by still a government official. I'm more concerned about the fact that the real people who are implicated in real corruption that saw to the decline of this country in very material ways still walk around free. And not only do they walk around free, and not only are they emboldened, but here is one even drafting a letter over the corruption of another, trying to hold somebody else accountable over their corruption. It's the same conundrum as the Judge Chope being a member of the JSC thing. You're not a fit and proper person to be in any position where you're holding anybody accountable.
Yeah, no, I very much agree with that point. And I think it really does show the ANC's disciplinary intentions that they, you know, they haven't disciplined Nompumelelo Makhanyane, but they are disciplining someone who is allegedly hurting one of their sort of ideological pieties of one of the things that, you know, they sort of care about and hold close to their heart. It's a sort of complete misalignment of priorities as an organization, I think. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. We hope that you found this show interesting. We will be back, of course, tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.